7:33 the time, Friday edition of the Mornings with Ed show. Those are the Zombies, and I checked. There are no Irish members of the band. All four members of the Zombies were of British descent. And I've got to ask the question on St. Paddy's Day. Is our mayor Irish? We are fortunate this morning to be talking to our mayor, Bob Whelan. As I mentioned yesterday, we had some scheduling conflicts, and the mayor was kind enough to do this morning. We welcome to the program on a Friday on St. Paddy's Day, Mayor Bob Whelan. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Ed. Yeah, glad to be here on a different day. Thanks for rescheduling.
Oh, no. Thank you very much for being flexible with your schedule as well. And I've been wondering, I started the show saying the name Whelan sounds like it's of Irish descent. Would I be wrong there?
You would be right there. For myself, three quarters Irish, one quarter English. The Irish are County Sligo and County Cork.
Okay, you've just said a couple of things. I have zero idea of what they mean. Describe that to me. What does that mean?
Three of my four grandparents traced their roots back to Ireland, and County Sligo and County Cork are where they their families hail from.
Okay, specifically from places, locations in Ireland. Wow. Okay, and have you been there? Yeah. Have you been back?
Yeah, we've been back. We had a wonderful trip when our kids were maybe 10 or 11, 12. And we spent about 3 weeks down there. And it's not a large country. And, we spent time down in the south, out to the west, up through, and then up to the lake country, Connemara up there, and then over to Dublin. And then a couple years ago, we went back. Actually, the McGilvrys were filming a movie over there about Ireland,
right.
And we went and stayed for a couple of days and watched them film, so that was great. Yeah, so it's a beautiful country.
That's very cool. So in my mind's eye, I have never been, but in my mind's eye, when I think of it, I think of just green, lush fields. Is that just a romanticism for me?
Well, of course, the cities are, like a city, but small cities,
right.
And most of the countryside, yeah, it takes about 2.5 hours if you drive across from Galway in the west to Dublin in the east, because there's like a freeway that goes across now. But
right.
Yeah, I'd say rolling farmland and grazing land is a lot of it. Then they do have the lake country and the more forested areas up there, and then beautiful ocean cliffs and sand dunes and things all over around the country. So it's quite beautiful. We did take a very interesting trip from Dublin to Belfast, Northern Ireland, and you can take a train up there and then take a tour. And that's a fairly grim urban place, and still showing signs of the battle between the Protestants and the Catholics.
Still, all these years later, really.
Yeah, they still have gates that they close at night, so certain neighborhoods don't get into other neighborhoods. They have a wall in certain areas. I mean, it's better, but it's still get real, signs of that, real vestiges
wow.
of that.
Wow, that's that surprises me.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's a beautiful country overall, I recommend a visit. Actually, in Belfast, it's kind of interesting. Big museum they have there is the Titanic. That's where the Titanic was constructed and launched from. Of course, it went to to England to pick people up before it left. But right. It actually launched from Belfast and was after being built there.
Oh, there's nothing I love more than learning new stuff, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate that piece of information right there. That's fascinating. Thank you so much for that. I'm going to roll through some things that we're going to be discussing on Tuesday night's agenda meeting, as well as something that's coming up on the April 4th. Agenda. And again, thank you for being here. Hoping you're celebrating St. Paddy's Day and have a wonderful day. We're going to be granting easements to Southern California Edison and Frontier for Woods Cove Underground Utility here. Now, is the grant just in case it does go through, and are we still not sure that it is going through?
Right. We we now know the design and what the easements have to be. So those are those are to facilitate it, but it's still got to come back to us, and it will, I think, in a few months, you know, for the formal process, and ultimately then people have to either vote to participate or not, you know, at least 50% of the properties being assessed to vote in favor for it to move ahead. So we'll see. That's a big, that will be the biggest undergrounding district the city's ever had if it goes through.
Right. So if let's say, I'm just using a for instance here, if there are 20 properties that are being assessed, at least 10 of them have to vote for it.
No, I shorthanded that, Ed. I didn't want to get into the weeds.
Okay.
If you get into the weeds, it's the total amount of assessments. So if there are $1 million worth of assessments, then people owning, you know, $500,001 worth of assessments of people whose properties are responsible for those, right, have to vote in favor. So it's actually, you weight it by assessment, but at least half the property, half the value of the assessment has to vote in favor. It usually is not too far off of, you know, in these residential districts, not too far off of more than half the properties, but a little bit different.
I'll tell you, Mayor Whalen, if I'm going to go into the weeds with anyone, I want to go into the weeds with you, man. You'll get me out of there. I appreciate that. Thank you. So we've had the same city attorney for decades now. Phil Cohn, our city attorney, is retiring. And what is the process like? Do we even under, because no council member was in office the last time we went through this process. Are we looking for a different firm, or are we looking for a different attorney within the same firm? This is going out to bid for the first time in decades. To explain to us the process, if you don't mind.
Right. It'll go out to, just like we're bidding on, you know, other projects, it'll go out. There's a web site you can use, Planet Bids, I think it's called. But anyway, any law firm meeting the minimum criteria will be able to apply. It could be the existing law firm, Rutan and Tucker, Phil's firm, could apply, and any other law firm that meets the criteria. There's probably, there's probably 6, 8, 10 city attorney firms that are prevalent throughout the state. And, you know, I think we'll get a few interested responses. And, so they will respond to the questions that have been put forth. It'll be then a kind of a typical recruitment process, right? It'll go through, we'll get the responses in, they'll be ranked, they'll be evaluated and ranked, and then ultimately the city council will have to make a selection out of the responding firms.
Right. What is one of the most important things that you see that you seek in a city attorney?
Well, yeah, I think you need experience. You need a broad range of legal background, not just, you know, the city attorney. There's many aspects to it. One is just running the meeting, right, and assisting with all of that aspect of it. But then there's substantive areas that we get into, you know, environmental issues. Public Records Act issues, labor issues. So you need a firm that has a, you know, pretty broad range of capabilities. So you're probably dealing with one primary lawyer that everybody calls the city attorney, but really the firm has to provide a wide range of services just to deal with all the issues that come up when you run a large organization.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for that. And we'll keep our, when exactly is he retiring?
It's flexible depending on when we get this other firm on board. Okay. I mean, we're targeting, we're trying to get somebody on board, you know, by mid-year or summertime. Okay. But we'll see how the process plays out. So it's good. He will not leave us high and dry one Tuesday night without a city attorney.
you can count on to hang with you no matter when it takes. That's cool. Thank you very much. So we're also that night, consideration of whether to authorize the release of records exempt from disclosure under the California Public Records Act. We talked about it last week. We've been talking about it for weeks. The big hullabaloo about our city manager being on her cell phone getting a ticket for it, paying that ticket, and still, there are people who want to dig deeper into whatever that is. Currently, body cam video is exempt. So my question is, why would the council consider giving that access to local zealots and a rogue city council member? Doesn't it set a bad precedent if we do?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to get too much into commenting on this since it's on the agenda Tuesday night as to what my views are on it. What I decided to do here and the reason it's on is, I worked with the city attorney and the outside council to develop a process whereby individual council members could view the records and then, you know, make a decision. My feeling was I want to put this behind us one way or another. Let's just, you know, have the council make a decision and move on, because it's consumed way too much time and energy, I think, and it's time to just, you know, put a fine point on the end of it, and let's decide what we're going to do. We're either going to release them or not release them. You are accurate that it's long been the city's policy not to release these kind of records. We have the council has the legal authority to release them if it makes it, the public interest outweighs, retaining them, but we'll see. We'll have a conversation Tuesday night.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you very much for that response. And you're also looking to adopt a resolution approving the interim use of the St. Catherine's property. And by the, this is the good stuff for, this is what I imagine is the fun stuff of a meeting. So you're looking at what some of the uses might be and how much you might charge for, like, for instance, former classrooms, hourly rates, daily rates, weekly, monthly, yearly. What type of businesses are you seeing that would take advantage of these opportunities?
Well, I don't know if there are that many businesses per se. I know there's a preschool business that's been very private preschool that's interested in the preschool room down there in the preschool playground. I think there's a lot of nonprofits that are looking for space that that they've wanted for years. The gymnasium, in talking to our rec folks down there, you know, the request for use is overwhelming there for, I guess just some of them you might say are businesses because they're private clubs, right? Volleyball clubs and that sort of, activity.
Right.
So it's, it could be a wide range. I don't know. We'll see. The tours went very well down there. I'm told they were well attended and people were very interested in what they saw. And I think we're actually overwhelmed by how great a facility it is, the quality of life there.
That's what I heard the most from listeners and friends and people that went and took the tours. They could not believe how great it actually is. And I'm really looking forward to the things that we might be able to utilize that facility for.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. I think we'll have, primarily we're going to launch it with recreation activities because people are just so confident a bit for the gymnasium in particular and some of the outdoor space down there. So, it'll be good. But I'm anxious to see how it unfolds and who might the ultimate users of it be. But it'll be busy.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Good. So a couple of more things before I let you go this morning. They're on the April 4th calendar, I believe, is the subject of saving 2535 and 2307 Laguna Canyon Road. A little later on this morning, I've got artist George Dubin coming in to talk about that. Lay the groundwork for us and let us know. Tell us kind of what's happening there. Councilmember Orgill and Councilmember Ranagi brought this up to the council.
Yeah, there's two buildings out there, a series of buildings, in the canyon where there's a list of artists who, for many, many years, have had their workspaces, and it's kind of a list of who's who in the artist community. I mean, there's Stacy Parlatt, there's George Dubin, there's Mike Azell, there's Marlo Bartels, you know, people who have been around forever doing work. And what these buildings have allowed is kind of the hard, you know, the sculpture work, the welding, you know, some of the tile work that, like Marlo does, so the physical, the real physical kind of artwork where you need space to throw things around and make noise and get dirty.
Right.
So these buildings have been there for decades, and many of these artists have been there for, you know, in decades, and we're using these spaces. Unfortunately, the gentleman who built them and owns them and has been, you know, a real supporter of the arts and the arts community and kept them at reasonable prices, is older, and I'm told he's, you know, not likely to live much longer. And once he passes, his family has said they're going to sell the properties. Just okay. You know, they've got people expecting proceeds from the sale of the properties. You know, in-law and a larger family, right? So I think what this item is designed to do is to create a discussion as to, is there a way to preserve them for the artists, right? And at affordable rates, so they're not just, the properties aren't just sold and, you know, turned into some kind of commercial or industrial use that prices out the artists. So that's the issue.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for laying that groundwork out for us. I really appreciate the explanation for that. And I wouldn't mind if you gave us another explanation as to, I should explain to the audience that I handed you a bag of kumquats. I've been bragging about my kumquats for the last 4 weeks now. I handed you a bag of kumquats at the Arbor Day celebration, just thinking, well, you know, the Whalens are going to go home and enjoy them as just regular snacks. But that's not the case. Kirsten Whalen apparently did something magical with these kumquats. Explain what she did with them, please.
I don't know if it's magical, but she loves to cook. So we did sample a few of them, and they were good. But she said, you know, so she turned. What she did was she parboiled them for 2 minutes, and then she put them into a simple syrup and cooked them and sliced them into slices. Put them in the simple syrup, cooked them into a sauce, and the wonderful sauce that we're gonna. You know, I said, what do you put it over? She said, oh, I could put it over chicken. You know, I could put it over, you know, so we're going to roast the chicken and spread some kumquat sauce on it is the plan.
Oh, it sounds amazing. I can't thank you enough for passing along that recipe or for passing along that secret to me. And yeah, it is magic. It'll be magic in my kitchen. Please tell Kirsten thank you.
I will.
And from our audience to you, thank you for coming in on a Friday and doing this for us today, Mayor Whalen, and enjoy your St. Paddy's Day. I'm going to roll you out of here with an Irish band. Do you like you too?
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
All right.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, Ed.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, Mayor Whalen. Thank you once again. And music from you too to roll us down the highway. 7:52 the time. It's the Mornings with Ed Show.